Joss's heart sank into the pit of his stomach. Plan? He had no idea what the plan was. Shouldn't someone more experienced with all things plan-making be in charge of this? As his panic subsided, Joss snuck a pleading glance at Morgan, who, thankfully, knew a cue when he saw one.
Obviously, Joss wants to head to the morgue, so we can examine the body for clues.
Joss gulped. Morgue? Who said anything about a morgue? All of the Slayers were staring at him, waiting for him to respond, to direct them in one manner or another. So he straightened his shoulders and nodded. Obviously. Morgan grinned.
Not to mention the body's friends, right, Joss?
Joss's eyes went wide. Friends? There was more than one body waiting for them at the gulp morgue? Right. Morgan slapped him roughly on the back.
So let's go, little brother. We've got three corpses to examine, the most recent victims of a psychopathic serial killer, all laid out neatly and awaiting your skills as a medical examiner. Lead the way.
Joss's stomach shriveled up into a little ball. He had no idea where the morgue was or how to get permission to go inside and poke around, and he certainly didn't want to touch one dead body, let alone three. What was Morgan thinking? After a moment, Patty, Ash, and Creighton chuckled. Then Morgan put a hand around Joss's shoulders and led him away.
Come on, little brother. It's this way.
Joss's stomach was already turning, and they hadn't even opened the door yet. From the outside, the building didn't look like an underground secret morgue run by the Slayer Society. Not that he was expecting a neon sign hanging out front or anything, but the outside of the building looked like a deli that hadn't been open in a very long time. In the window was a dust-covered sign that proclaimed the building was available for lease, but Joss imagined that was just for show. The Society did everything they could to make things appear completely normal. That being said, he couldn't help but wonder what they would say or do if a curious realtor or business owner contacted them to inquire about a lease. Sorry, he imagined them muttering into the phone, but that property is in secret use. You see, we perform autopsies there on victims of vampires. Morgan pushed the small, filthy doorbell and stepped back, saying nothing to Joss. Joss had been hoping he'd speak, that he'd say something to lighten the mood. It was a somber occasion, yes, to go see a body and examine it for clues to a crime, but Joss needed something lighter to ease his stress, something to distract him for a moment. It had been difficult enough to see the man's remains lying in that alley, but to walk into a room and witness his autopsy examination? That was seriously stressing Joss out. He'd seen tons of true crime shows and had watched several cop shows with his mom, but there was an enormous difference between television death and real death. Real death was scary. Real death was a taste of the future, a bite of the inevitable. But Morgan wasn't about to crack a joke to ease Joss's stress. Maybe because he knew that Joss needed to take this seriously. Maybe because he knew that even a small joke wasn't going to erase the fact that they were about to be incredibly close to a dead man. Maybe because he didn't care. Joss didn't know for sure. All he did know was that there was a shuffling noise inside the old deli, and then a figure appeared on the other side of the grimy glass. Without uttering a single word, Morgan slipped his hand into his shirt pocket and withdrew something, slapping it against the glass for the mysterious figure to see. It was only as he was returning the item to his pocket that Joss realized it was Morgan's Slayer coin. His own Slayer coin was in the left front pocket of his jeans. He mindlessly traced the coin with his thumb as the figure unlocked the door. Before stepping inside, Morgan threw him a glance.
Keep it cool, little brother. Don't think too much about what you're seeing. Just go through the motions and you'll be okay. In and out. You ready?
Without thinking, perfect practice for this whole experience, he wagered, Joss nodded and followed Morgan inside. What greeted him as he moved into the building was dust on dust on more dust, and echoes of what looked as if it had once been a bustling business. The menu board still listed dishes available for hungry customers, everything from sandwiches and fries to soup and salad. Small square tables sat piled at the far end of the room, and beside them were stacks of chairs. If it weren't for the layers of dust and neglect, the furniture would have been bright red in color, matching every fourth tile in the floor. but what had once been filled with voices and movement and delicious foody smells was now a forgotten place. Joss's footsteps were nearly soundless on the floor as he followed Morgan to the back of the deli. In front of them, leading the way, was a short, pudgy man. Thanks to Morgan's broad shoulders and impressive height, Joss could barely get a look at him, but what he saw gave Joss the impression that the man was utterly humorless. They moved swiftly through the dining area and kitchen and slipped through a small door at the back of what might have been a storage area of some kind. As they descended the stairs wordlessly, Joss felt his heart flutter with uncertainty. He knew for a fact that if Morgan weren't here, he certainly wouldn't be following this strange, unpleasant man into a secret door and down some dusty stairs. But he trusted Morgan, maybe more than he trusted any of the other Slayers, and he knew that Morgan would never lead him into a situation that he couldn't handle. At the bottom of the stairs was a large metal door with enormous hinges, and when the nameless man opened it, puffs of fog rolled out, giving Joss pause. He'd seen enough crime shows to know that dead bodies were stored inside coolers, but he'd never seen an entire room that was a cooler. Their host grabbed two large coats from hooks on the wall and tossed them to Joss and Morgan. Once the coats were on and zip closed, he handed them each a pair of rubber gloves and led them inside.
"Close that door."
They were the first words he'd uttered to them since they got here. The inside of the cooler was lined with steel, all but the floor, which appeared to be solid cement. All along the far wall were metal gurneys, and on top of each was a black bag that was zippered closed. Joss tucked down deeper inside his coat's collar. He'd seen enough television, enough movies to know what those bags contained. They were body bags, and Joss was here to peer inside of not just one, but three. Only he didn't know exactly how he felt about that. On one hand, he'd seen death before, so it was nothing new to him. But on the other, two of these bodies had been dead for a while, long enough to exhibit things like rigor mortis, when a body goes stiff, and livor mortis, when a body turns a weird bluish color. Witnessing the decaying of a body somehow made the death so much more real to Joss. Truth be told, it frightened him to be confronted with death in this way. It scared the hell out of him. But Slayers don't turn and run. Slayers face their fears. Their host pulled one gurney to the center of the room and looked pointedly at Morgan, then at Joss.
"The one nearest the door just got here. Don't touch any of the equipment. And when you're done, hang those coats back up and make sure you close the door."
Joss sputtered. "We will, sir." The man paused, as if he wasn't used to being given due respect, and nodded before disappearing out the cooler room door. Morgan slid his gloves on, and Joss followed suit, hoping that he wouldn't have to touch the body at all. Then Morgan looked at him as he stepped over to the gurney farthest from the door.
"The first time I came to a society morgue, your uncle made me open the body bag. He said it was better just to get it over with, to face that fear and move on. He said he was doing me a favor, one that I wouldn't be grateful for until many years later. As it turns out, he was right."
Joss inhaled deeply, which was a mistake. The smell of frigid temps, preservation fluids, and slowly rotting flesh filled his nose and coated his tongue. Joss gagged, clamping his gloved hand over his nose and mouth. It smelled like latex, which was awful, but so much more pleasant than the smell of the morgue's occupants. Morgan paused, waiting for Joss to recover. Joss could feel the heat of embarrassment crawl up his neck and paint his face red.
"I'm going to spare you that, little brother. I'm not going to make you do anything. The choice of whether or not you pull that zipper and open that body bag is completely and totally up to you. And after it's done, no one needs to know how it all went down, but for you and me. You feel me?"
Joss nodded, and before he could second-guess what he was about to do, he spoke from behind his latex-covered hand. His voice was muffled, but his words still somehow rang clear. "I want to do it. I want to open it, Morgan." Morgan seemed to gauge him for a moment before nodding.
"Okay, then. Open it up. Let's see what we have."
Joss reached out with his free hand and grasped the zipper pull, only it didn't go anywhere. He held his breath and tried pulling it with two hands, and after a moment it gave and the zipper unzipped. Joss practiced breathing lightly and tried to ignore the smell, which had intensified once the bag was open. For a moment, he thought he was fine. Then he ran to the trash can on the other side of the room and lost his lunch. When his stomach had settled some, Morgan pulled back the plastic of the body bag, revealing the corpse of a woman in her mid to late 60s. Around her neck was a string of pearls that reminded Joss of his Aunt Petunia. Her eyes were closed, and from where Joss was standing, she simply appeared to be sleeping, like Cecile at her funeral.
The first thing we want to look at is her wound and determine the cause of death.
Ah, yeah, I can see it now. Laceration to her throat.
He peered over his shoulder at Joss.
You want to take a look?
Despite the fact that he really, really didn't want to take a closer look, Joss nodded and moved in. As he did, Morgan gently moved her head to the side. The flesh on her throat had been ripped away. The pearls on that side were tinged with blood. He stared at her corpse for some time, thinking about Cecile. Not frightening monster Cecile from his nightmares, but real Cecile, the sweet little girl who lay in a small white coffin at the front of the room, looking very much like she was asleep. He wondered if this woman had a family that was missing her, if she had a brother who loved her, the way that he had loved Cecile, the way that he still did.
Morgan had already examined the second body, another victim, this one a black male, not much older than Joss, with a large puncture wound in his chest. Then he opened the third bag, the one containing the gentleman Mason and his team had discovered earlier.
As we already examined this body as a team in the alley earlier, we can assume his cause of death was trauma to the jugular vein and loss of blood. But there are no guarantees that that's the truth, so we need to check for other injuries, such as a broken back or neck.
Morgan gently lifted the man's head, feeling along the top part of his spine. Then, in a moment that sent Joss's jaw crashing to the floor, Morgan dropped the head back on the table and backed away, cursing loudly. Joss didn't know what to do or say.
What? What is it, Morgan?
Morgan growled.
His mouth.
Joss looked from Morgan back to the corpse. Apart from hanging open, he didn't notice anything unusual about it at all. All he could offer in response was a blank stare.
Inside his... it's mouth, Kit. Look inside its dumb mouth.
Morgan yanked him closer, and Joss peered inside the body's open mouth. Inside, just behind the canine teeth, were small teeth. No, tips of teeth. Tips of fangs. The man, the dead creature that they'd found, was a vampire. Chapter 6. A Farewell to Childhood.
I don't understand. Why are we even talking about this? I mean, who gives a damn if vampires kill other vampires?
Ash sounded more than a little irritated, and Patty was having a hard time getting anyone to see her point.
Because the killer may not be a vampire at all, and Elysia won't take that lightly. Innocence could be in serious danger. Plus, even if the killer is a vampire, it has to be completely nuts to attack and kill its own kind. So do we really want to let some crazy vampire wander the streets of New York?
She shook her head at him in a way that reminded Joss of his Aunt Petunia.
No way. Not on my watch.
Joss sighed and sat forward on his spot on the couch.
Patty's right. We can't just let people die, all because of some vampire. I have to find it and kill it.
Creighton folded his arms in front of his chest.
So where do we start, kid?
Joss chewed the inside of his cheek for a moment before turning to Morgan. It was a long shot, but anything was worth a shot at this point.
Morgan, you do a lot of recon. I've seen you rifling through papers. Is there a group of vampires that the others listen to, the way we listen to the society elders?
Morgan nodded slowly.
There are several groups or councils that run things in Elysia, yes.
This is the end of disc number one. Please insert disc number two. This is disc number two.
Morgan, you do a lot of recon. I've seen you rifling through papers. Is there a group of vampires that the others listen to, the way we listen to the society elders?
Morgan nodded slowly.
There are several groups or councils that run things in Elysia, yes.
Any of them in Manhattan?
Very few of them actually live here, but yeah, a couple. Why?
Joss smiled. Get their names and whatever info you have on them. If we can track down the leaders, we can learn whatever it is that Elysia knows, and if we can learn that,
we can gather all of their intel on the killings as well.
Patty's mouth hung open in surprise and wonder. Ash cracked a smile.
Kid, you just saved us months of work. The vamps must know everything that's happened with the killer. We could catch him.
Creighton nodded.
We could kill him.
I could. Joss eyed them all with the first bit of confidence he'd felt since stepping off that plane at LaGuardia. I could kill him. And I will. Morgan returned to the living room an hour later, his arms loaded up with file folders. He passed them out, and Joss flipped open the red one he'd been handed. Inside was a photograph of a young girl, roughly 16 years of age, and way smoking hot, as Henry would have put it. She reminded him of Kat. Kat. He wondered where she was now, and if she ever thought about him in a way that didn't call for vengeance. He doubted it very much. He understood, perhaps better than anyone, Kat's driving need for revenge against the person who'd stolen her father away. After all, Joss shared that same drive, those same emotions when it came to the vampire who killed his sister. He couldn't blame her for wanting to kill him, but he did miss her friendship, despite the fact that he worried that she might follow through on her threats. Her text messages oozed hatred, but also, beneath the surface, showed her pain at having lost Cyrus because of Joss's actions. His insides twisted with guilt and loss that only Kat could understand. He missed Cyrus, too, hated though he did. Morgan gestured to the file folders.
These are all some pretty high rollers in Vamptopia, but one is particularly nasty. Who drew M?
Joss slid the photograph to the side and read three words that gave him pause. Subject's name, M. Morgan looked at him and shook his head.
Figures. She'll be a fun one to track, little brother. Cunning, cruel, and not to mention the oldest vampire that we know exists, which means she's crazy strong. Of course, if anybody has a shot at getting close to her, it's you.
Joss blinked. Why would you say that? Patty chuckled, shoving Joss playfully.
Because you're a teenage boy, Joss. Em is trapped in her age. She'll likely gravitate to other teens. Besides, you're cute.
There was a distinct pause, one followed by uproarious laughter from Ash, Creighton, and Morgan. When it finally died down, Creighton patted Joss on the back.
A cute is definitely something you want on your Slayer resume, kid.
Joss rolled his eyes and looked down at one of the sheets of paper inside the red folder, the one that listed usual haunts. Whatever. I'm going to head out to Toys R Us and then this obscura place, see if I can dig anything up about M. It wasn't long before Ash and Patty decided to start out on their own respective investigations as well. It felt good to start his journey with two other Slayers. If nothing else, it was a little less lonely. They stepped outside of the brownstone and Joss marveled in the warm air. Patty grabbed him by the sleeve as they reached the sidewalk and tugged him off to the side, where they were met by Ash.
We have to run through a little tutorial before you hit the mean streets, little man. Camouflage, tracking. Have to touch on them all before you get started.
Joss drew his eyebrows together in mild insult.
But I know that stuff already. Or are you forgetting that grueling summer in the Catskills?
She shook her head.
Things are different here, Joss. That was a wild environment, out in nature, where you have to hide, move, search in a certain way. This is an urban environment. They're two completely different approaches.
Great. Joss's shoulders slumped some. Back to square one. Back to makeup application and not knowing what the hell he was doing. Ash patted him roughly on the arm.
Don't get so worked up about it, kid. It's easier in an urban environment. No mascara required.
Patty gawked.
I never made him put on mascara.
That made Joss smirk, but he was still worried. How was he supposed to hide from vampires in a place with few trees and track them on concrete sidewalks? It felt like everything that he had learned last year hadn't prepared him for this scenario at all. He couldn't help but feel a little annoyed at having to, basically, start over.
Ash met his eyes, and even though he looked angry at what Abraham had revealed to them about Joss taking money to kill a vampire, there was kindness in his gaze now, understanding even. The crowds are your friends. Blend in with them. The vampires will see you, but they'll care less about a skinny kid who's surrounded by people than one who's not. Stay out of empty alleys and places you'll likely find yourself alone. That makes you an easy target, which is the last thing you want. Patty nodded in agreement.
Dress in dark colors. Bright colors draw attention, and you don't want to stand out in any way. The key in an urban environment, as any environment, is to blend in with the background. The background in a place like New York is busy streets and bustling places.
And that, Ash remarked as he stepped onto the street, is all you need to know. Patty looked from Ash to Joss, a worried crease on her forehead.
Ash, what about the kid? We can't just leave him to his own devices. I mean, we're tracking some of the most powerful vampires in the world here, and he's barely out of the 9th grade.
Mid-street, Ash turned back and smiled. I don't see a kid. I only see a slayer. Patty released a frustrated sigh.
Be back here by 7 tonight, Joss, and whatever you do, don't engage any vamps you come across. Evade and get your butt back here to report. Remember, reconnaissance and planning before action, if you want to live, that is.
A proud smile curled Joss's lips as he moved down the sidewalk. Not knowing where he was headed exactly, confidence aided his stride. Live? Yes. He wanted to live. He was a slayer, and nothing and no one could change that. Chapter 7. Reconnaissance. Abraham had been very clear in his instructions to Ash, Patty, and Joss. Do as much reconnaissance as they could before the sun set. Get done and get home before the shadows stretch. As the sun was the vampire's enemy, so it was the slayer's greatest ally. They had to get out, learn what they could about the vampire leaders, and get back to home base before New York City transformed into Vampire City. New York, it seemed, was not a place to take unnecessary risks when it came to vampires. It was a common area for the beasts, and once the sun had set, no one was really safe, especially not slayers. Joss moved down the street, his nerves jumping at the idea of navigating Manhattan on his own, let alone encountering vampires. He'd studied a map of Manhattan the entire flight here and had internet access on his phone, but none of that could set his nerves at ease. The fact remained that he was still a 14-year-old boy in an unfamiliar city full of 1.5 million people, some of whom had fangs. He took a second to get his bearings, wishing all the while that he could sneak back into the house and get his stake, an impossibility, what with Abraham on high alert and none of the slayers realizing that Joss already had one. It was a strange thing, the idea of being on such a serious mission, armed with a dangerous weapon, headed for one of the largest toy stores on the planet. But Toys R Us in Times Square was one of M's usual hangouts, so that was precisely where Joss was headed. Once he consulted his map, of course. He remembered the cab passing through Midtown on the way from LaGuardia, and once he figured out which way was north, he started walking. It took him about a half hour, but it wasn't long before he was standing in a crowd of people, wondering where on earth Times Square could possibly be. Only then did he lift his gaze and realize that he was standing at its center. Part of him, the part that was just a simple teenage boy, marveled at the enormous neon signs, bright even during the day, and the tourist in him wanted very much to visit the Hershey store and a few of the shops he passed. But Joss pushed that part deep down inside of him and focused on what he'd come here to find. Vampires. It was a strange thing that one of the oldest vampires in existence preferred to hang out at a child's toy store. Did vampires appreciate toys in the same way that humans did? Did they really appreciate anything other than blood? He wasn't so sure, and he doubted very much that there were many vampires in Midtown. It was such a busy place, full of humans who could see them, could see what they were trying to do. Seemed like an easy place for a vamp to get caught. He imagined vampires would visit the area and then get out quickly, like a buffet of tasty food. He wondered briefly if Vlad had ever been to Times Square before, or Cyrus, who he'd tried hard not to think of since the day Joss had found blood bags in his refrigerator. the day Joss realized that Cyrus was a vampire. He couldn't think about his old friend, couldn't think about the explosion he'd caused that had killed him, and he certainly couldn't think about Kat and the way that things had been left between them. It hurt too much, and he'd had enough pain to deal with without dredging up something that he had no control over. Someday, he had no doubt, Kat would come for him and for vengeance for her dead father, but until she did, he had to push her out of his mind and focus on the task at hand. Responding to her texts, acknowledging her in any way was just inviting her into his life. He had to ignore her, to focus on what he was doing, and that meant learning all he could about the serial killer that the society had tasked him with destroying. He stopped people inside the store, a few employees but mostly fellow shoppers, and showed them Em's picture, but no one had seen her, or at least, no one was admitting to having seen her. He stepped outside and glanced around, marveling at all of the people, but sighing just the same. As entertaining as Times Square was, Joss was here on business. His next stop was the strange little antique store called Obscura that, according to his map, was much closer to the Slayer brownstone. It was practically on its doorstep, and only 7 blocks away. Joss grumbled under his breath. This meant another half-hour walk back to the brownstone. He should have planned better. Just when he was sure he had studied the map of Manhattan well enough, he'd get all turned around again and waste time. Next time, he swore he'd do better. As he walked, he thought about how enormous Manhattan was. There was too much ground, too many buildings, too many small places in between and underneath for one Slayer to cover in a single day. It would take Joss years to search it all, and that was just Midtown. And it was also working under the assumption that the killer that he was looking for wouldn't be moving around all that much, a hugely stupid assumption at that, as if a bloodthirsty monster was just going to sit around and wait for a Slayer to find it. Highly, highly doubtful. His phone buzzed, and with some reluctance, Joss withdrew it from his pocket. He wasn't certain why he felt the compelling need to read Kat's messages, but he did. Even though they were threatening, with an undertone of sadness, he found them comforting. He missed her, after all. As sick and stupid as it was, he missed having Kat as a friend. She'd been the only friend, besides the Slayers, who hadn't been related to him or turned out to be a monster. He flipped it open and read. "Your mother is very pretty. She misses you, you know. K." His throat dried instantly. His heart picked up its pace. How did she know what his mom looked like, or anything else about her? What was she doing if she was where Joss thought she might be? Reluctantly, he typed in a message and hit send. "Are you at my house, Kat?" There was a brief pause. "Frightening, isn't it? To think that someone could be so close to harming those you care about. Yes, I was at your house. Sorry I missed you. K." He hurried to send another message, promising himself it would be his last. "Come and get me, Kat. If it's me you have a problem with, then come and get me. I'm waiting for you. You just have to find me first." Joss hit send, pocketed his phone, and moved down 7th Avenue at the same pace as many of the tourists, pausing every few minutes to survey his surroundings. It's not like it made him stick out or anything. Hundreds of tourists were doing the same thing, only they were pointing up at the buildings or holding up their cameras, not caring that people behind them were just trying to walk. It was annoying, but it really did make it easier for Joss to blend in, and it gave him time to get a good look around and see if there were any noticeable signs of vampiric infiltration. But all Joss could see when he stopped and looked all around were tourists and frustrated-looking people behind those tourists. Joss continued down 7th Avenue and took a ride on 14th Street. The sounds had changed since he'd wandered away from Times Square. It was already quieter, already more pleasant, less busy. The street still had tons of people on it, but no one was looking aggravated because someone in front of them just couldn't move another step without snapping a picture of the Coca-Cola sign. There were a couple of street vendors, some businessmen, two young mothers pushing strollers that held tiny babies, and people that Joss was certain he'd forget the moment that they passed. The smell of falafel cooking on one of the food carts made Joss's stomach rumble, but he resisted the urge to stop and buy a snack. After all, he wasn't on vacation. He was doing reconnaissance. He was supposed to be on the lookout for any sign of M or the serial killer, not tasting yummy street food. The problem was, He was finding a lot more street food than vampires. A woman in a crisp purple suit walked by, and as she did, she smiled at Joss. The look in her eyes seemed off, as if her smile hadn't quite reached her eyes and she knew it. As he continued down the street, he glanced over his shoulder. The woman had stopped walking and turned around, her eyes locked on Joss. His stomach did a flip-flop, but he wasn't sure what to make of it. She wasn't glaring at him or anything, or even making her way toward him, but for some reason, Joss felt oddly threatened by her presence. Then his eyes scanned her face, her body, and Joss knew what was going on, and why he felt like this woman despised him, even though they had never met before. She was pale, paler than she appeared to be. He could make out the line of tan foundation on her neck, covering up just how pale she really was. And something in her eyes reminded him of a show that he'd recently watched on the Discovery Channel, one that featured lionesses hunting. She looked hungry. She looked fierce. She was a vampire and Joss was completely unarmed. The corner of her mouth trembled a bit in satisfaction, as if she could see the acknowledgement on his face. She couldn't, though. Joss had become a talented actor in recent months, so clearly there was something more to her reaction, something solid in her mind. An affirmation that could only be brought on by knowing precisely what he was thinking. It was as if she was reading his thoughts, like pages in a book, and something in those pages had amused her. Joss didn't want to turn away, didn't really want to move in any way. All he could picture was a lioness waiting for her prey to make a sudden movement and then leaping on it, killing it. He tried to push the image from his mind, but it refused to budge. As did the looming knowledge that Joss's stake remained packed in his suitcase back at their base of operations. At that thought, her lips twisted into a grin. She was reading his thoughts. Abraham had taught him that much last summer, only he hadn't taught Joss any way to block a vampire's telepathic ability. Maybe, Joss thought, because there was no way to do so. The evil glint in her eyes said she knew that he was a slayer, an unarmed slayer. The upper hand in this confrontation belonged absolutely to her. Joss mulled over his options for a moment. He was on a street with people, but the population was quickly thinning. Continuing this trek would likely lead him to a place where he'd be completely alone with the vampire woman, at least if he was right about his map directions. He was feeling foolish and more than a little bit lost. On paper, New York didn't look this big. It was very different in real life. He thought it was possible that he was heading in the direction of Washington Square Park, but his confidence was suffering a bit. And even if he was right, to do so, he'd have to walk directly past her, something that sent his nerves jumping like crazy. He didn't want to go anywhere near her. What he really wanted to do was run. Joss furrowed his brow. Run? That hadn't been his thought. He didn't run when he was frightened. He never had, not since he was 10 years old. He buckled down and faced what he was frightened of, except in his dreams, except when it was Cecile who was chasing him. That thought, that panicky suggestion that he should take off down the street in terror, hadn't come from his mind at all, and yet he could still hear echoes of it whispering from the far corners of his brain. Run! Run! Narrowing his eyes at the woman, Joss realized that the thought was coming from her. She had, somehow and against all reason, put the thought into his mind, and he realized with anger that a person who was less in touch with their usual selves might believe that thought to be theirs. She was capable of mind control of all things. It both horrified and intrigued him. It also reminded him of a moment he'd shared with Vlad right before he'd staked him. Inside his mind, he distinctly heard the words, "Stake Vlad, stake Vlad, stake Vlad." But had they been in his thoughts? Or something put there by someone, something else? By Dablo, maybe? No. Of course not. He was just having a moment of self-doubt. He'd gone to Bathory to stake a vampire. He was just second-guessing those actions now, because the vampire had tricked him into believing they were friends. Clenching his fists at his sides, Joss strode with a confident step toward the vampire woman. A look of intrigue passed over her features as he approached, but she said nothing. As Joss passed her by, he muttered, "Nice try, bloodsucker." He walked by, keeping his stride as certain as he was able, and as he turned back onto 7th, he glanced in her direction. Only she wasn't alone anymore. Two more vampires stood at her sides, bookending her. They were both male, but one was tall and lanky, the other short and with a stocky build, and all three of them were watching Joss with a noted hunger in their eyes. Tearing his gaze away, Joss hurried down the street, staying with the crowd for as long as he could. As he navigated his way down the street, the sun began its initial descent, stretching the shadows more quickly than Joss had realized it would. He picked up the pace, and as darkness draped over the city, Joss found himself jogging, then running, then sprinting. Because Ash had warned him not to be out after dark in Manhattan, and he trusted Ash completely. Besides, he could always check out Obscura tomorrow. As the cool of night enveloped him, the front steps of the brownstone came into view and Joss slowed his running until he was just walking again, his heart still hammering in his chest. In the not-too-far distance, he swore he heard a voice say, "Sounds delicious." He hoped that it had been a human that had spoken those words, but couldn't be sure. He hoped it wasn't a vampire that had been eavesdropping on the song of his heart and dreaming about making it its next meal. But he didn't stick around to find out what was what. He hurried up the steps and into the brownstone, his knees aching from all the walking and running he'd been doing today, and closed the door behind him with a loud thud. As he leaned his back against the wood, his fingers reaching for and flipping the deadbolt, his chest rising and falling in uncertain panic, Joss vowed that he would never again come so close to being outside at night while they were in New York, especially unarmed. Because Ash was right. Vampires were everywhere, and you just never knew if they were watching you. He took a deep breath and let it out, the tension slowly leaving him. As he moved through the foyer, he nodded greetings to Ash, who said, "Hey, kid, find Em?" Joss sighed. "Not exactly." Ash nodded, pursing his lips for a moment. It looked very much like he wanted to say something to help Joss out, but in the end, all he said was, "Morgan's looking for you." "Thanks." Joss turned and moved down the hall to the library. He'd been hoping for a bit to eat. After all, he hadn't eaten anything at all since the slice of cake earlier, and his stomach was rumbling its protests. But apparently, satiating his hunger would have to wait. He found Morgan poring over a pile of notes so high that Joss wondered how he could possibly make any sense of it all. "What's all this, Morgan?" Morgan didn't look up.
"Intel gathered by our team members. Most of it, I'm sure, is totally useless. Rumored hangouts of the vampire elders, overheard bits of conversation, possible relatives, theories on where they might be located, but it's what we've got, so..."
Joss shuffled his feet. He didn't have anything to hand over to Morgan. Hell, he hadn't even known he was supposed to take copious amounts of notes on his activities and findings. It made him feel stupid. It made him feel small.
"Anything to report, little brother?"
Joss shook his head and sighed. "Nothing that led me to the killer, and there was no sign of him, but I didn't make it to Obscura. There might be a lead there, I don't know. I'll check it out, though. I did find a few vampires, but the only thing they seemed interested in was having me for lunch." Morgan looked up at him, a small glimmer of concern in his eyes, but he didn't speak of it. Instead, he nodded slowly and said,
"Yeah, they'll do that. Be careful."
Joss lingered there for a minute. He wanted to tell Morgan that he had been careful, and that he had been looking, but he was feeling lost and confused and totally unsure of exactly how he was supposed to track down some serial killer who may or may not actually be a vampire. But he couldn't say any of those things, and even if he could, Morgan wasn't going to fix this for him, wasn't going to do Joss's homework for him. It was up to Joss to find the killer and dispatch him as quickly and quietly as possible. And he could do it. He was a slayer, from a long line of slayers. He could do anything. So why didn't he feel like he was up to the task? Without another word, he headed upstairs to the comfort of his bed. Tomorrow, he was going to find a clue if it killed him. Chapter 8. A Voice from the Past. Obscura was a small antique shop with lots and lots of things that simultaneously made Joss's skin crawl and thrilled him to no end. There were two-headed animals of the taxidermy variety, human teeth on display, and the creepiest ventriloquist dummy that Joss had ever seen. It was a weird, wondrous place full of curiosities that Joss very much wished he could spend time to truly appreciate. But he was here on a mission. A young man, thin, dressed in a black suit, stood behind the counter, and when Joss said hello, he smiled brightly.
Anything I can help you find?
Actually, yes. Joss reached into his back pocket and withdrew the picture of M. He held it up and the man's face dropped, his skin paling so fast that Joss thought he might just pass out. He knew M. Clearly he knew her, and he was terrified of her. Do you know?
No.
He shook his head at Joss, tearing his gaze away from the photograph.
I've never seen her before. You should look elsewhere.
Joss returned the photo to his pocket. Look, you obviously know her, so... The man met Joss's eyes.
Please, look somewhere else. I don't want any trouble.
Joss furrowed his brow. He'd scared the man, simply by showing him a brief glimpse of a photograph. Just who the hell was he looking for that she could inspire that kind of fear? Okay, elsewhere. And where might elsewhere be exactly? He hated to scare the man any further, but the fact was he needed help finding M, and this guy was one of his only leads. The man's bottom lip shook. A whisper escaped his lips, seemingly against his will.
You might try V-Bar.
Joss put on a pleasant, grateful smile. Thank you. As he exited the shop, he heard a distinct sigh of relief from the man behind the counter. It was followed by another sigh from a man on the street. Joss looked up to see Ash, scratching his head and looking over a crumpled piece of paper in his hands. Ash? At first, Ash blinked at him. Then recognition filled his eyes.
Hey, Joss. Any luck?
He shrugged casually. I just got a small lead, so I'm heading over to a cafe called V-Bar to look for M. What about you?
You'd think that finding some big Russian vampire in Manhattan wouldn't be such a challenge, but I got nothing, kid.
Joss furrowed his brow. Isn't there a huge Russian population here in the city?
Yeah, but none that I know of have fangs. At least, I haven't gotten close enough to tell.
Ash sighed again and started moving down the sidewalk.
Anyway, I'll catch you later, I guess.
Later, Ash. He hated to admit it, but knowing that he wasn't the only one having any trouble gathering intel really made him feel better about his lack of progress. After a trek that took him several blocks north, Joss entered V-Bar and thought about what had just happened at Obscura. Maybe he should be more careful about flashing M's picture around town. Maybe people would respond better to his questions. Maybe he'd learn more. He took a seat at the bar and ordered a black, unsweetened iced tea with extra ice. His throat was parched and his feet tired after a long day of recon, so it made him feel relieved that V-Bar was somewhere that he could sit down and have a tasty refreshment. The presence of his wooden stake in his back pocket, hidden under his shirt, was an even bigger relief. Plucking it from his suitcase before breakfast had lifted an enormous weight from his shoulders. It was pretty amazing how comforting just having his steak with him was, especially considering that he was, to his knowledge anyway, the only slayer in the room. V-Bar was an interesting little cafe. It was also bustling for a late afternoon, but it wasn't so crowded that Joss felt squeezed in or anything. The bartender handed him his tea, took his money, and made change. As Joss dropped $3 into the tip jar, he said, "This is a cool place. Who owns it?" The bartender smiled, his eyes sparkling.
"My father, actually. A man by the name of Enrico Ciotti. Why do you ask? You an associate of his?"
Inside Joss's mind, he weighed the possible outcomes for any given answer. Settling quickly on what he deemed the wisest choice, he nodded. To which the bartender shook his head, chuckling.
"They get younger all the time, I swear."
"Shall I pour you the house red, then?"
"No need to hide behind a tea. The only human here today is pretty drunk in the corner over there."
Understanding spread through Joss's veins like hot lava, slow and simmering. V-Bar was owned by a vampire, bartended by a vampire, and frequented by vampires. The man behind the bar was a blood drinker, though likely a young one to be making such blatant slip-ups like he was, and he now thought that Joss was a vampire as well. In an action so quick and so utterly smooth, the actor in Joss stepped onto the stage and flashed a bemused smile, even though the boy Joss was trembling in terror at the idea that he was currently surrounded by monsters. "Believe it or not," he chuckled, "I actually enjoy the taste of tea." Smiling, the bartender folded his arms in front of his chest and leaned against the bar. "I've heard stranger things. One vampire I know enjoys jelly donuts. Another, a man named Otis, has a distinct weakness for freshly baked chocolate chip cookies." Joss took a sip of his tea. The hint of fresh mint danced on his tongue, but still his mouth tasted bitter at the mention of a familiar name. He had no real idea of how vast the vampire world was, but Otis, even in the human world, was a relatively unusual name, so he took a breath and let the actor in him inquire. "Do you mean Otis, Otis?" The bartender's expression brightened. "You know him." Joss did know Otis, as well as any student knew his teacher, as well as anyone knew their friend's uncle, as well as any slayer knew a vampire. He sipped his tea again, trying desperately to maintain his calm and casual appearance. "Yeah, I know Otis." "Then you should meet my father. He and Otis go way back." He gauged Joss for a moment, his smile pursing a bit, as if to say he could read Joss's hesitance in his eyes. "Unless, of course, you and Otis aren't exactly friends." Joss shrugged. "I'm afraid we had a bit of a falling out in recent times." Falling out. What a nice way to refer to the fact that Joss had staked Otis's nephew Vlad and then Otis had come after him. No matter where Joss went, it seemed his past was eager to find him. "A shame. You seem like a nice enough kid." He shook his head, then widened his eyes in apology. "Sorry. I shouldn't call you a kid when I don't know your age." Joss knew a hint when he heard one, but he really had no realistic idea of how old vampires got. 80 years? 100? 200? 1,000? He had no way of knowing what would be a sensible guess, so he shrugged again and sipped his tea before glancing around the room. To anyone who wasn't in the know, it would look just like any cafe. The people, the vampires, they just looked so human. So normal. There was no surprise that vampires could blend in so well. "It's okay. No offense taken. So V-Bar is usually this busy during the afternoon?" The bartender refilled Joss's cup and replaced the lid, sliding the cup across the bar. "Depends. Today, as it happens, there's a trial pending, so it's busier than usual. I take it you're not here for that?" "No, I'm just visiting the city for a bit. Heard it was a pretty interesting place." A vampire to Joss's left lifted a coffee mug to his lips and sipped at the steamy contents. Joss shuddered inwardly at what those contents likely were. The bartender leaned over the bar, dropping his voice to a conspiring tone. "You're not one of us, are you, kid? You're not a vampire?" It felt as if several hot coals had somehow become lodged in Joss's throat. He swallowed them, and they burned all the way down before landing in a heavy pile at the bottom of his stomach. The actor in him had fled the stage, leaving only a panic-stricken Joss behind. He met the bartender's gaze and swallowed, his throat still burning. No words came to mind, nor did any escape his lips to explain what he was and what he was doing here. The realization that he might be on the verge of death settled on the edges of his being like rain on a window pane. But he shook the thought away. Vampires, he had to keep reminding himself, could read minds. He wasn't even safe inside his own head. After a moment that seemed to linger for several minutes, the bartender shook his head slowly. "I won't tell if you won't, but you'll find I'm one of the few who can't get a good read on whether someone is human or vampire. Odds are the rest of them know all about you, including your thoughts. So why don't you take your tea and get out of here before you get hurt?" The burning in his throat lessened some, but didn't disappear completely. "I think that's a smart idea." "Me too." The bartender kept his eyes on Joss as he wiped the bar down with a moist cloth. Joss bit the inside of his cheek, pinching the soft pink skin between his molars, and thought. He wasn't about to bring up M, but he might be able to get some inside information from a man who talked to everyone about all sorts of things, a bartender. He leaned forward and lowered his voice to a whisper.
Before I go, do you know anything about a serial killer on the loose? Maybe a vampire?
The bartender groaned and tossed the cloth behind him with a frustrated grunt. Then, inside Joss's brain, he heard a voice. It was clear as crystal, but not at all coming from the bartender's mouth.
Great. A slayer.
The sound jolted him. He knew that vampires could hear humans' thoughts, but he had no idea that it could possibly work the other way around. Doing everything he could to maintain his semi-cool demeanor, Joss raised one shoulder in a non-committal shrug.
Let's just say I'm a concerned citizen and leave it at that.
The bartender raised his eyebrows in surprise.
You heard that?
Slowly, and doubting that he should be admitting to it at all, Joss nodded. He tried to act as if it was no big deal, like he'd listened to 1,000 vampires' thoughts in the past week alone, but it was hard to hide his own shock. Why had he been able to hear the bartender's thoughts and not Vlad's or Otis's? What about this moment was different than those? His heart jumped before settling back into a more normal rhythm. Wiping his forehead dry with the back of his hand, the bartender moved down the bar and checked on a few other patrons. He poured one a mug of something hot and gave two more cups of half-tea, half-blood, the vampire's version of an Arnold Palmer. When he came back to Joss, he whispered furiously,
"Listen, the only reason I'm telling you this is because my father is forming his own hunting party to take care of the issue. That trial today? It's to make everything nice and legal before my father unleashes his dogs on the city. The whole thing is causing enormous problems for Elysia, risking exposure and endangering our kind. But personally, I think taking action will only expose us further."
Joss listened, waiting for whatever it was that the bartender was trying to share with him. He'd already said a mouthful, but something, instincts maybe, told him that there was more.
"Boris happens to be a personal friend of mine. I've tried talking to him, tried reasoning with him, even tried bribing him, but he's blood drunk and there's no appealing to his good sense. He's killing just to kill now and endangering the lives of good vampires everywhere with his senseless acts. I know that only one option remains, taking him down. But my father will rip him to shreds. If you promise me that you'll do it quickly and as painlessly as possible, and to leave V-Bar and never return, then I'll tell you where Boris is."
Joss nodded slowly, his heart hammering in his ears. This was exactly what he needed, and he couldn't believe he was getting this information straight from a vampire. He debated whether to share how he'd come across the information with the other Slayers, but decided that would be a bad idea. What if they stormed V-Bar? He would have broken a promise to the friendly bartender and possibly endangered his group. No, that was a crazy thought. Probably something put there by the vampire bartender. Still, some information was safer locked away in his brain. The bartender searched Joss's eyes, perhaps looking for a modicum of understanding, and then scribbled an address down on a slip of paper. He slid it across the bar. Joss reached for it, but the vampire shook his head curtly, his demeanor shifting abruptly.
"Grab it and get out, but act casual and keep your thoughts bland."
Laughter poured into the bar as someone entered behind him. It had a warm, friendly air.
"I'll never understand how you can wear that hat in this heat, my friend."
"I love this hat."
Joss straightened. He knew the second voice. It was Otis, Vlad's uncle, from Bathory. Every molecule in his body tightened with tension. If Otis saw him here, he was as good as dead. The first man spoke again before taking a seat on the stool to Joss's left.
"And the girl who gave it to you?
You know the answer to that, Enrico?"
From the sound of it, Otis was standing directly behind Joss. The bartender poured two cups full of a red liquid that sent a wave of queasiness through Joss, then passed them to Enrico, who turned and handed one to Otis. In his peripheral vision, Joss caught a brief glimpse of Otis's sleeve.
"Are you ever going to tell her?"
"I'm fairly certain she knows."
"Fairly certain? Otis, you've just proven the universal truth that no one, not even someone with telepathy, truly understands women."
They both laughed then, and Joss wondered how he was ever going to escape from V-Bar unseen. Apparently, the bartender was wondering the same thing. He moved down the bar some and said,
Otis, it's good to see you again. In town for pleasure?
Business. I'm here to assist your father's search.
Joss could hear the empathy in Otis's tone, empathy that had not been there the night that Joss had staked Vlad.
I'm sorry, Stephen. I know that you and Boris are close. It shouldn't have come to this, but we have little choice now.
Joss cupped a small piece of paper in his hand and took a sip of his tea. He was just about to casually slide from the bar stool and make his way to the door when a memory flashed through his mind, one that sent a shiver up his spine. On the ground in front of him, Vlad was kneeling, Joss's bloody stake poking out of his chest, the silver tip now stained burgundy. Blood had stained his clothing red, pooling around him on the ground. Vlad's skin was unbearably pale, and as he lifted his head and parted his lips to speak, Joss already regretted the hateful words that he knew would come. He deserved to hear them, yes, but he didn't want to have them echoing in his mind for years to come. What he wanted to do was to cover his ears, his eyes, and run away from this scene as fast as he was able. He'd just staked his best friend. He'd just killed one of the only people on the planet who cared about him, who he cared about. And the worst part was, he wasn't even sure why. His fingers, slick with Vlad's blood, were trembling. Vlad tried to speak, but his words could only manage to come out in a whisper.
Joss, behind.
Then Vlad crumbled over onto the ground, unconscious, likely dead, and if not, he would be soon. Joss turned at his friend's warning to find Jacek, Dablo's assistant, he presumed, approaching quickly. He darted a glance to the stake in Vlad's chest, but wasn't sure he could bring himself to remove it. Then, much to Joss's surprise, Jacek gestured behind him.
Do yourself a favor, young one. Get out of here now.
Then, in a blur, Dablo and Jacek were gone. The evening played out over and over again in Joss's mind, and confusion enveloped him. Had he really just stabbed his best friend? Had he really just killed the only boy besides Henry to stand by his side? Or was it something else, something to do with Dablo? Was Dablo, pale-faced and strangely motivated, in fact, one of the undead? Had Dablo or Jacek somehow been controlling his actions? Or was Joss now just looking for someone else to blame for the awful thing he'd just done? Joss's thoughts were racing in panic as he tried to figure out what to do next. Slayer rules dictated that he should immediately contact the disposal unit followed by his team. But what Joss really wanted to do was to call the hospital and do what he could to help Vlad, even if it meant facing the society's wrath. Making up his mind to listen to his gut and throw caution and rules to the wind, he reached into his pocket for his cell phone. But in a blur that reminded Joss only of a strong wind, the phone was knocked from his hand by an unseen force. A moment later, Otis stood in the clearing, inches from Joss, crushing the phone into bits and pieces. His eyes were fierce and fiery, his mouth was curled in a snarl, and in his mouth, his fangs shone brightly, angrily, hungrily. Joss McMillan was about to die. Otis turned abruptly toward him then, as if the spark of Joss's memory had attracted his attention. Their eyes locked. Otis's voice was quiet, but Joss could feel it coming to a boil just below the surface.
Joss McMillan, fancy meeting you here.
Joss froze, but offered Otis a polite nod. He couldn't count on his fingers how many times they'd shared the same room, breathed the same air. Otis had seemed harmless then, just another teacher, just another man. But he was something else to Joss now. He was the enemy. Beside Otis, Enrico clucked his tongue.
Enemy? That's a strong word, young Slayer. You'd best be careful who you refer to as such around my fair city. Unless, of course, you're looking to make enemies, largely by coming here to my establishment to cause trouble.
Otis touched a hand to Enrico's chest.